You're listening to World Affairs. I'm Ray Suarez. Of all the combatants of World War II, it's fair to say no country struggled as openly or as thoroughly with the legacy of that war than Germany. Strict laws suppressed the use of Nazi symbols. Hitler's writings couldn't be sold. Far-right parties were regarded with horror by politicians and everyday Germans who remembered what really happened in the 30s and 40s. But today, a populist right wing is resurgent across Europe, and Germany has not been spared. On January 6th, when footage of rioters storming the U.S. Capitol was broadcast live around the world, some far-right extremists in Germany were watching it like a soccer game.
And their team was, of course, the team that was storming Capitol Hill.
When Stefan Kramer saw the footage, he was shocked. But he also felt a chill of recognition. Kramer is head of domestic intelligence in the East German state of Thuringia. This is where Johann Sebastian Bach learned to play violin, where Martin Luther was ordained as a monk, and Goethe wrote the first drafts of Faust. It's also where the Nazis won their first seats in local government, and today, the radical right is gaining ground in Thuringia again. Germany's far-right party, the Alternative for Germany, or AfD, won a number of seats in the state parliament in 2019. Kramer's intelligence agency has identified right-wing extremism as one of the biggest threats to Germany's democracy, and the U.S. Capitol attack was a moment of deja vu for him. A similar attack had almost succeeded 6 months before.
We've seen so-called corona pandemic demonstrators storming the German Reichstag.
Widerstand! Widerstand! Widerstand!
German politicians from across the political spectrum have condemned a far-right attempt to storm the parliament building in Berlin.
This was shocking to Germany, too. Although nothing to compare what you guys have been through with Capitol Hill, certainly not with the damage and with the killings that were taking place there.
In contrast to the United States, the mob in Berlin was pushed back by police and was unable to breach Parliament. In some ways, Kramer is an unlikely choice to lead a domestic intelligence unit. A Jewish German, he spent a lot of his career outside of counterintelligence, advocating for Jewish communities and fighting anti-Semitism. He took over Thuringia's intelligence unit in 2015, after Germany was rocked by a series of murders committed by the NSU. Tell our listeners about the killings and what you and others found out about the NSU.
Look, the NSU was a National Socialist Underground, I think the name says it all, neo-Nazi group.
The National Socialist Underground is believed to have been robbing banks and murdering people undetected for the last 14 years.
We found out that they basically, between the years of 2000 and 2007, killed 9 migrants as well as 1 policewoman, had 43 attempted murders, 3 explosive attacks and 15 robberies. So a quite violent group. And the most disturbing, let's put it mildly, situation was that the investigation committees by federal parliament found out that the security agency that I'm heading today at those days was complicit with these perpetrators.
The NSU murders weren't uncovered until 2011. And it turned out Thuringia's domestic intelligence unit had been monitoring the group for years, without making any arrests. German domestic intelligence even admitted one of their undercover agents was at the scene of at least one of the murders.
That was something that was absolutely new and gave us all practically a big shock. I was still Secretary General of the Council of Jews in Germany, and I even demanded publicly that these institutions, agencies should have stripped down to nothing and had to be rebuilt, actually, in order to make sure that all these mistakes and these terrible actions would be taken in consideration. We have seen that in all these years, right-wing extremism and terrorism was basically played down by the security agencies, whether it was police or the domestic intelligence community. And even such an event like the NSU, the discovery of it, did not really change the whole attitude at first. But there was a very, very strong political will then across the party benches that this should be looked into, so that things should never happen again like this. But the problem is that especially the victims of the NSU still today have more questions than answers.
Is this complicity that was discovered, is the rise of the AfD, this hard right party, a sign that, well, some Germans are forgetting the Nazi past? Are more Germans feeling, more than 75 years since liberation, that it's time to throw off that historic guilt that marked modern Germany?
Look, you're getting right to the point, and I'm not trying to be a politician here or a diplomat. The fact is that we have had in Germany racism, hatred, anti-Semitism all these years. It never vanished, basically. But a vast majority of the German population really learned their lessons of history and tried very hard not to forget and to keep these things in mind to make sure that the present and the future would never become like 1933 and 34, like the Weimar Republic. But in the meantime, we've actually seen the AfD as one of the very, very right-wing parties. They have started to change the discourse in public discussions. And yes, you're right. In the meantime, we're living in a country where it is much easier to talk about things that were usually a taboo a couple of years ago. And this has changed the whole environment in which we're living. So hate speech is much more on the agenda. And we consider today about 20 to 25%, so almost one quarter of the public opinion, not to be right-wing extremists, but at least to be open to such populist ideas and threats. You know, one of my former presidents of the Jewish community used to say, we in Germany have done a lot to handle the past, work on the past, and make sure that it is supposedly not coming back. We're at the same level of anti-Semitism, the same level of racism and hatred like any other European country. The problem is simply Germany is not like any other European country because Germany once invented the Holocaust. And therefore, it's like with somebody with pneumonia. Once you got pneumonia and you start coughing again, everybody has to be really worried.
Is it fair to say it's been a bigger problem in the East, the part of the country that was under Soviet domination for more than 40 years, than in what used to be the Federal Republic, the place we knew here in America as West Germany?
Look, I think it would be too easy to shame and bash just the East Germans for being especially in favor of such issues. But yes, we have to consider that there are certain developments in the different German states that led to certain situations that we're facing today. And the unification, even after more than 30 years, is not complete. Actually, we feel in some areas in this country more separated than we've done a couple of years ago. There was one famous German chancellor, Helmut Schmidt, who was once asked, Mr. Chancellor, how long do you think the unification will take until everything is equal and everybody loves each other and there is no separation anymore? And he used to smile and give a big smile. He said, you know what? One really nice summer night, 9 months and 40 years, and then we can talk about unification.
Well, the East has not seen the kind of economic development that was already well established in the West by the time of unification. Germany has controversially been home to a large number of refugees from the wars and tumult of the Middle East. Has that accelerated some of the tendencies with the German far right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But this is not to blame the refugees for. This is a psychological situation in which the people are living in. First of all, you have to understand that even after 30 years, people in Eastern Germany do not get the same payments for their ordinary daily work, are not getting the same pensions for their lifetime that they have spent in working. So they feel second-class citizens in their own country. Of course, there has been a lot of subsidies, a lot of money, a lot of building up initiatives in the East. So one could say, look, people, just get over it and your economic situation is much better than before. But what we have to understand is that this is deeply rooted into their mind that they feel second-class citizens. Living in these circumstances, of course, changes people. And with one generation, you cannot rechange basically towards a different situation. So there's a lot that has to be still done. what we see today is that, especially in the eastern parts, the AfD and the neo-Nazi parties are much better off than in the western states. But if you look especially on the right-wing neo-Nazi scene, which is very active today in the eastern states, most of the key figures, actually all of the key figures, are West German people that came in the last 20 years to East Germany and are trying to get now their feet on basically fertile ground, which they are working on.
Are there international links for groups like the NSU, like the AfD? Are they in conversation with the Dutch far right, the Hungarian far right, the Ukrainian and Polish far right?
Absolutely. I mean, since everything is in globalization, also, of course, the right-wing neo-Nazi scene is on the track of globalization. And it's interesting, especially for me in Thuringia, since we are one of the hotspots for neo-Nazi rock concerts and mixed martial arts sport events that we've seen in the last years. We can see at these events that you have right-wing extremists and fans from all over the world. They're coming from all over Europe, from Scandinavia to Italy to Greece, from Spain, Portugal, all the way to the Eastern European countries, but also from the United States and even to some extent also from South America and Africa. So we're sometimes shocked to see how obviously hip these concerts are so that people would travel all the world around. The internet plays a vital role in connecting all these groups and making personal contacts. But we have to make no mistake, this is not just an internet phenomenon. We have traveling neo-Nazis going around all the world, as well as Americans coming to Germany and visiting their friends. And most astonishing, we just discovered a couple of months ago, that even German neo-Nazis are traveling to visit their Russian Nazi friends. Although we all know that Russia always claimed that they don't have any Nazis and that they were the strongest fighters against Nazism, which in the circumstances of the Second World War has certainly something to it, but today the world has changed a lot.
Neo-Nazism is far from the only transnational extremist movement Kramer's agency is monitoring. While the vast majority of Germans approve of their country's successful pandemic response, an increasingly vocal minority is frustrated by the government's lockdowns. Conspiracy theories are flourishing, and some of them are American exports.
When I raised that issue in Germany, saying, look, I have seen from the right-wing extremist arena anti-pandemic demonstrators who were looking for then-President Trump to come over and liberate us from the perpetrator, Chancellor Merkel, being a member of the deep state that is basically running Germany. The first reaction, of course, was, oh, probably they are just some people who need to see some shrinks. But what we found out in the meantime is that that QAnon idea, conspiracy theory, which was at first laughed upon because it was considered, you know, one of this American thing like genes and Scientology, easily spread across the Atlantic. And what we see today is that from the likes and listeners and watchers on the internet, almost 200,000, including agencies like mine and journalists who are interested, of course, are fans of QAnon Germany. We're seeing that on the anti-pandemic movement front, we call them in Germany Querdenken, which is hard to translate, but interesting is that the first letter of Querdenken is the same Q like in your QAnon. We see the same anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. We're seeing all these kind of hatred speech among those in Germany. It is not the same movement like in the United States with QAnon at the moment, but it becomes more violent. It becomes more aggressive. Neo-Nazis, anti-vaxxers, anti-capitalists, white supremacists are a global problem, which means that we as security agencies, whether it's police, military, intelligence, or just simply citizens of our democratic countries, we need to globalize too to fight these forms of hatred which is spreading around. And that is something which we need to understand and to learn, that those threats to our open societies and democracies are not any longer domestic threats. Domestic becomes global. And therefore, we need to get together, talk with each other, and find a common strategy to successfully fight these forms of hatred of humankind. And I think we have a long way to go until we are there, that we do that successfully.
Well, I'm sure you've followed the news about the attack on the Capitol here in the U.S. It's coming to light that some of the men who breached the defenses and stormed the legislature have been in law enforcement and the military, even held elected office. When you read that, were you surprised, not surprised? How did you take it?
Look, when I saw the pictures of Capitol Hill being stormed at, yeah, I was shocked. And many of my colleagues and friends and family were shocked, and we couldn't believe what we were seeing. That is the first thing. Second, after almost equal events like in Michigan a couple of months before, when the state capitol was stormed by people, I was kind of surprised that not more security would have been taken there. But to answer your question, no, I was not surprised to see that these men, even from the security agencies and from the military, were part of it, because first of all, you could see it from the way they were dressed. And second, over here in Germany, we see more and more also members of the intelligence community, police, and military to be part of this right-wing extremist scene, who are trying to, they want to overcome the government and basically restore their order. So it was not surprising to me.
As part of its national reckoning with the Holocaust, Germany overhauled its police force. And today, the average German officer is far better trained than his or her American counterpart. Cadets undergo at least 2.5 years of academy training. They visit concentration camps and are required to take classes in law, ethics, and police history. But right-wing extremism has still managed to creep into Germany's military and law enforcement. In July 2020, the German government disbanded a special forces unit after it was infiltrated by extremists. And in August, a network of police officers, former soldiers, and ordinary citizens were caught planning for Day X, an apocalyptic moment when the right wing would take over Germany and save it from itself. One group member stockpiled ammunition, another purchased body bags. As we see that there are ultra-right-wing infiltrators in police forces and in the military in the United States, you have had this experience in Germany. How do you root it out?
Look, we have the same problems in Germany. With all the education programs, the study programs, the academies, the training, even if some people say that, for example, German policemen are much better trained than probably the ordinary American one, I don't think that really is true. I can easily find cases in Germany and show you policemen and women who desperately need more training on certain subjects. I don't think it's really a question of such trainings to give them hard facts on what is the state and what they should fight for. When we look at the question, why do young men or women coming from very different parts in society, from different families, from different economic, cultural background, end up with extremists, then we should easily ask ourselves, why didn't we end up with extremists? What happened in our life when we were children, when we were young adults and then adults, that we did not get on the wrong track? And when you go through your own history as a human being, you will easily, I think, at least find moments where you think, I could have taken the wrong path, but somebody, somewhere, something was there to hold me back, keep me on the right track, or stop me and make me think. And those social contacts, this empathy, this way of taking care of each other, showing gratitude for what people service, make them feel that they are accepted, that they are respected for what they do. Those are the basic issues that we need to talk about. So it's probably a much more psychological approach that I would recommend in making sure that the people stick to the right track. Which, of course, by the way, so no misunderstanding, when I'm talking about the right track, I'm not talking about the right track for one political party or one political opinion. I'm talking about the basic values of human beings that bind us together of being parts of a civilized, open society, a democratic society. It's much more emotional than it's just fact-finding what we need to do.
You mentioned earlier that you're a Jew. The listeners will not know, because they're not as familiar with you, that you're an adult convert to the religion, which must be an unusual thing to be in Germany, given German history. But you didn't just become a guy who says his prayers on Friday night and reads Torah. You became a leader in Jewish organizations, a leader in the German Jewish community. Has this put on not an extra burden, I don't want to use the word burden, but an extra set of eyes with which you look through to see your own country and your own people as you struggle with these ideas that we've been talking about?
Look, I would never say that Jewry is a burden. And of course, that's not what you said, but that's never the way I looked upon it. As an adult, after a long way of trying to figure out where I would belong, finding myself, I had not only the feeling, but the understanding that Judaism was the right thing to belong to. It was my true heart, full will and wish to be a member of that tribe, which, by the way, if you look at anti-Semitism and how you have to fear about the life for your own family, even in today's world, it's also something that you want to consider very, very carefully before you do that step. Nevertheless, I did it. I'm very happy about it. My wife is Jewish. My children are Jewish. We're living as much as I can a Jewish life under the circumstances we're having here. There's a very nice Jewish joke that wraps it up and brings it on the point. How are you going to make God smile? Very simple. Tell him your plans.
I hesitate to talk about national personalities. And I'm always careful because I'm a close student of history. But there is a through line, you might say, a thread that runs through modern German history of very high sympathy for a right-wing view of the world. And for a time, Germany tried to suppress it in the post-war decades. Does suppressing it just not work? Is there something about Germany, its national tendencies, its ideas about itself, the way it understands its history, that's always going to see some of this expressed in a range of national public opinion?
Look, I'm very very cautiously trying to answer your question. I'm not going to...
I cautiously tried to ask
no,
it.
No, so. Absolutely. So we're both very cautiously. But on the other hand, I want to be straightforward. I remember in 1989, when I was traveling the United States and all the unification stuff was going on in Germany, everybody was asking me, where's Germany heading to? What will be the result? And I was very carefully saying, look, I mean, it's not a German DNA to be nationalistic. But on the other side, I described to my American friends how Germans would do a revolution. If they want to hijack a train track, they would buy a ticket to get on the platform before. I mean, maybe that wraps it up a little bit. But what I'm trying to tell you here is there has been a big problem in Germany with the fact that the Germans never fought and never bled for their democracy. Democracy was given to the Germans after the Second World War, which was wonderful and which I'm very grateful for, by the Americans, by the Allied forces who liberated and then step by step brought Germany, at least West Germany, back into the society and the community of the Western Allied powers and basically the world after all that has happened, specifically when we're talking about the war, the Holocaust, and many other things that I can hardly wrap up here in a few words. The Germans never fought for their democracy. They learned their democracy. And the interesting thing is, if you learn something, of course you can deal with it. Of course you can operate it. And German Grundgesetz, Verfassung, Constitution, the parliament was functioning very well because the Germans learned very well how that is supposed to work, but they never kept it to their heart. And the moment that the environment changes, that the economic situation, the social situation, the security situation, world globalization is getting a little bit confused, It's not that you know, they look back to what they have learned, but not what they feel in their heart that needs to be taken. What we need to work upon specifically in Germany, we have for many years, and I'm a teacher myself for young officers to be at the German Naval Academy. I'm a teacher for political science, and what I'm trying to teach these not kids anymore, but young students, and sometimes older students who become officers, is what democracy means, what their role as military forces is within democracy. And it's sometimes, it's very interesting. Most of my colleagues teach them how many members they have in their German parliament. And I'm saying that's not my duty to teach you how many members you have in your German parliament. You can at least read that in the internet. What I'm going to teach you is how politics works, how you are as a citizen part of this, how democracy needs you to get involved and to understand, for example, that the basic values of humankind need to be protected no matter whether I like that person or not. So these basic ideas basically of a democracy. And it's very astonishing to see that these young kids are just looking at me and they are longing for such educational programs, which we have neglected for the last 10 to 20 years because we thought it's not necessary anymore in Germany to do these teachings, if you want to say it like this.
Stefan Kramer is the head of domestic intelligence in the German state of Thuringia. He's been the head of the agency since 2015. Stefan Kramer, great to have you with us on World Affairs. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you so much, and be well and stay healthy.
You've been listening to World Affairs. I'm Philip Yun. That was Ray Suarez in conversation with Stefan Kramer, the head of domestic intelligence in the German state of Thuringia. German intelligence may soon place the country's entire far-right political party under surveillance for violating the German Constitution. Our program is produced in partnership with KQED, with funding from TPG, First Republic Bank, and Chevron. We want to hear from you. What did you think about this episode? What topics would you like us to cover in 2021? Our email address is feedback@worldaffairs.org. This episode was produced by Jared Sport and Teresa Katsarilis. Joanne Jennings is our executive producer. Ray Suarez co-hosted. Temba Daniels provided research support. Our technical supervisor is Jim Bennett. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Philip Yun. Thank you for listening.